Setlist in association with 7 Digital.
This week, Lizzo, coronavirus and Journey. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to take a look back through some of the biggest and most interesting music business news stories of the last week. A week when Peloton, the exercise tech company, settled a legal dispute with the US music publishers.
Yes, they did. Now, obviously, if like me, you're really into fitness and doing exercises at home, then you're fully up to speed with this company
people might not know you. My laugh might seem... People might be confused about my laugh.
They don't understand why that...
was justified. There you go.
They don't know why that was a funny remark. Then, obviously, I know what Peloton is, not just because they got involved in a tedious copyright case in America. That's not the only reason I know about this company. I know about this company because I love doing home fitness. And what I really love is having machines to help me with my home fitness. And not only machines that help me, but which provide videos instructing me on how to exercise with great music in them. That's what I'm all about, really. Hence why when the music industry sued Peloton, I knew immediately what this was about. They did then subsequently IPO, didn't they? This startup, this fitness firm called Peloton. They then had initial public offering, which was quite newsworthy because it didn't go very well. So it's not just the copyright stuff that makes me aware of them. But yeah, so it's this company. They have these machines that you use to do exercises. They have these videos that go with the machines. The videos have music. And a bunch of independent music publishers sued last year saying you're using our songs without license. And we didn't really start reporting this story until the next stage, because the next stage was interesting, because rather than Peloton saying, oh, we didn't use those songs, they tried to countersue by accusing the National Music Publishers Association of anti-competitive conduct, because as is quite common in copyright cases, particularly in America, the trade body sort of coordinated the legal action, because it had, I think it was 14 ultimately, independent music publishers were involved in this litigation. And as I say, it's quite common in the music industry, especially in the US, when there is lawsuits that's involving more than one label, or in this case, more than one publisher, that the NMPA on the publishing side, or quite often it's the RIAA on the label side, sort of organised the lawsuit, although technically it is still the publishers or the labels doing the suing. So that's quite common. But nevertheless, Peloton claimed that that was anti-competitive behaviour. The NMPA then started saying, oh, that's just because you can't come up with any proper defence to the copyright case. You're trying to distract everybody. This is really sneaky of you. And there was quite a lot of tough talking on both sides. Peloton's anti-competitive arguments failed. That case got dismissed. So the copyright case was heading to court. And then, just over a week ago, everyone made up.
Yeah, they're all friends now.
And then these two organisations who have been really terse about each other over the last year were suddenly, oh, we love Peloton with their great fitness machines, finding a new way to monetize music. And oh, we love the music publishers and the NMPA helping us with our innovative licensing model. So good for them, I guess. Don't want to have to take it through the courts. But as is always the way, bad for us, because we prefer nasty, controversial cases that get to court, don't we?
Yeah, I think post-settlement statements is probably my favourite genre of statement.
Where people who previously hated each other are suddenly best friends, possibly through slightly gritted teeth.
Yes, sometimes not. I mean, they don't even pretend. But usually, yeah, you have a weird thing where people have been at each other's throats for months, maybe years. And then suddenly they're like, oh, God, this company's so innovative and brilliant. Oh, and the music publishers, they make music available. It's such a brilliant thing. And it's just odd, isn't it? You think, like, the people sit there writing their statements just going, this is weird.
But fitness company music publishers have made up. And for people like me who are fans of both fitness and music, that's good news.
Yeah.
So that is one thing that happened in the last week, or actually just over a week ago, because I think it happened just before we recorded the last podcast, wasn't it? But recently, but it's not what we're here to talk about.
No, we should also say the podcast is still on tour.
We're on tour. AKA, we're really on tour this week.
It has no access to the studio. So that's why the sound is a bit different.
We're at the seaside.
We are. We're in my living room.
So this is a bit like the Radio 1 roadshow of old. I bet that came to Margate.
It probably did, yeah.
It probably did. So, yeah, so this is a sort of by the seaside roadshow edition of Setlist, but we won't be having any competitions with members of the audience identifying snippets of pop songs or anything like that.
No, because the only member of the audience we had was one of my cats and I just threw him out. So.
Yeah. And then he didn't look like he wanted to take part in any spot
really
pop song competition.
Dug his claws into my shoulder. That's another story.
It is another story. Anyway, and that's also not the story we're here to talk about.
That is not what we're here to talk about this week. We're actually here to discuss how the coronavirus is affecting the live music industry and the bust-up between the current members of Journey, which has resulted in a $10 million lawsuit. But first, the three songwriters who claim that they helped Lizzo create her hit Truth Hurts have hit back at her copyright lawsuit against them with their own legal filing, in which they say that the dispute centres on her bad faith and unprincipled attempt to deny songwriting and producer credits and royalties to her former collaborators, aka them.
Yeah, so we talked about this last year, didn't we, when Lizzo filed her lawsuit.
We did.
So this is
I think we might have been somewhat on Lizzo's side at the time.
We were.
We'll see how it goes by the end of this.
I would be rubbish as a judge or jury because I read Lizzo's lawsuit
and I was like, sure.
Go Lizzo, these people are trying to screw money out of you. And then I read the response to that lawsuit, which is also kind of a countersuit. And I'm like, down with Lizzo. She's screwing over these poor producers. So, yeah.
It's good you don't work in a job where you're supposed to be neutral and think critically.
Well, I can see both sides, I think, is the point. It's just I tend to go with whichever side I've seen most recently. So we did talk about this first time round. You may remember this actually pre-litigation. This began on the social networks because these two producers, the Raisin Brothers, there's two of them.
Yes, Justin and Jeremiah.
So they took to Instagram last summer, or maybe September. I can't remember. Anyway, it was sometime last year. They took to Instagram basically to say, this Lizzo hit Truth Hurts, which was only recently a hit at that point, even though she released it ages ago.
Yes.
It's an old record, but then I think, was it, it went viral on TikTok and then it was synced into a Netflix show.
Yes, and so it kind of, well, it's weirdly, it's from her second album, but had a resurgence while she was promoting her third, which is strange, but hey, that's the age we live in, isn't it?
It is the age we live in, and so I think it went to the top of the Billboard Hot 100, which is still a thing, and after that, these producers, the Raisin Brothers, posted on Instagram saying, we were involved in writing that song, but we're not credited, we've not been given our share, we're not earning in this hit that we helped create, and every time we try to get in touch with Lizzo to talk about this, she shuts us down, and we've kind of reached a point where the only thing we can think to do is to go public and post on Instagram. So that was sort of where this particular dispute first appeared. And then not long after that Instagram post, that's when Lizzo filed her lawsuit, where she was basically saying, you're wrong, and looking for the courts to confirm that these guys were not involved in the creation of her song Truth Hurts, nor were they due a cut of any money. Although she did concede that the key lyric from Truth Hurts also appeared in an earlier demo track that she made and never released, and that that demo track was recorded in the studio of these producers, the Raisin Brothers. So she did concede that, but she did not concede that they had been involved in writing this lyric and therefore were due a cut of Truth Hurts.
Yes, because the Raisin Brothers aren't claiming to have written Truth Hurts or even worked on Truth Hurts, but they are saying that they were involved in the creation of this previous song called Healthy, which was a demo that was never released, that contained this key line, I've had a DNA test and I'm 100% that bitch. I mean, there was a separate dispute over that line and who created that line, but we'll leave that aside for today.
Well, that's to do with the fact that it was already an internet meme before anybody started writing either of these songs.
Yes.
And there was a debate over whether or not there was a copyright in the original tweet from which the meme appeared. But that's not what we're here to talk about. That's a side dispute. But the point was, yes, that what the Raisin Brothers were saying was we were involved in creating that earlier track that had that lyric, which was then borrowed in Truth Hurts. And that's where our claim to a co-write credit and a share of the Truth Hurts copyright comes from.
Yeah, so in her lawsuit, as we've discussed in a previous edition, so if you want to go into this a bit deeper, I guess you can go back and listen to our discussion of that, if you can find that in the archive. But she said that while Healthy, this earlier track, was written in the Raisin studio and did indeed include the lyric that's in question. They did not write any part of the material in question. They did not come up with the idea of including the lyric in Healthy. They did not help Lizzo decide how to sing the lyric in the unreleased demo. And they do not co-own that work, is what her lawsuit says.
It also implied in her lawsuit, I mean, I must admit, I've not gone back and read her lawsuit since this new lawsuit came in, because I've got to spend all my life reading lawsuits, although sometimes it seems like I do. But she almost kind of implied that they weren't even in the room when this particular lyric was written or sung. Yes, it was their studio, therefore, yes, they were in the building, but that they weren't actually there when this thing was done, was what she was implying. She also, in her lawsuit, in addition to denying that they had any involvement in creating the lyric that the two songs have in common, she also then said, whereas on Instagram, the Raisin Brothers had said that when they've tried to sort this out, Lizzo and her people keep shutting them down, she said, that's not true. We had a big conversation about all of this, and that you, the Raisin Brothers, and your management and your legal team earlier in 2019, I think when the Netflix sync was being negotiated, and so this issue of there being another claimant to the Truth Hurts copyright came up, because obviously when you're negotiating a sync deal for a service like Netflix, if there's a potential copyright dispute, that is a problem. And so she was saying, when all of that was going through, we had a discussion, and you yourselves, the you being the Raisin Brothers, admitted that you weren't involved in writing that lyric and therefore you didn't have a claim in Truth Hurts, is what Lizzo said in her lawsuit.
Yeah, her line on this, I guess, was that the Raisin Brothers had already agreed that they had no part in this track. They just happened to own the studio where she recorded a demo. And that
this
was,
being the earlier track.
Yes. And so had already said, yes, we have no claim to this song, Truth Hurts. And what she was kind of saying was that it wasn't an issue until it became a hit, and then they kind of came back and went, oh, actually, yeah, we own that song.
She even, in her lawsuit, cited a phone call that she herself had had. So, as is always the way in things like this, a lot of the conversations that have gone on between the two parties, actually, they've been through management and legal, etc. But in her lawsuit, she did say that she had actually had a phone call in early 2019 with Justin Raisin, and her lawsuit said, during that call, Justin acknowledged that neither he nor his brother had anything to do with the material through which they had claimed their purported share in Truth Hurts. That same day, after Justin Raisin made his concession, the Raisins manager contacted Lizzo's lawyer and told her that the Raisins were no longer making any claim to Truth Hurts, said Lizzo's lawsuit.
There is a third songwriter involved in this dispute, Justin Rothman, known as Eves.
Another Justin, just to confuse
us. Just to confuse you, we'll call him Eves from now. And he was also present during the recording sessions for Healthy. But she said in her lawsuit, he'd never made any claim to any ownership of Truth Hurts until, again, it was a hit and the Raisins were saying that they were going to dispute ownership of it. And suddenly he was on board with them as well, saying, yeah, I own a cut of that track. And again, she was kind of presenting it as like, these guys, they've just smelled money because there's a hit and they've just decided they want some of that cash, even though they have and know they have no claim to any of it.
So this was all in Lizzo's lawsuit last year. But the reason we're talking about it again is because, yeah, the Raisins and Eves Rothman have put in their own legal papers in the last week, the first half of which responds to Lizzo's lawsuit. And it's one of those classic things that you get in cases like this where they basically respond. I mean, Lizzo's lawsuit was quite long. I mean, it told the story step by step by step.
Yeah.
And so therefore, it's quite a long lawsuit. And then the first half of the Raisins lawsuit responds to Lizzo's lawsuit sort of paragraph by paragraph, basically saying, oh, we disagree with that paragraph. Yeah, we disagree with that paragraph. Oh, we disagree with that paragraph. Oh, that paragraph, we disagree with that. So there's several pages of them disagreeing with pretty much everything Lizzo said. And then
it's kind of a Rashomon situation, telling the story from
Well, then the second half of their lawsuit is their side of the story.
So, yeah. So their lawsuit says it wasn't just the case that it happened to be their studio that she was working in. They say that they were very much in the room working on this track with her. And it was while they were in the room, another collaborator on the track who does have a co-credit on Truth Hurts, Jesse St. John, who showed her the 100% that bitch meme. And then their lawsuit says it was Jeremiah who enthusiastically suggested that they add the line to the song they were working on.
Yeah, and earlier they say that the Raisin Brothers and Eves had done lots of preparation for this session, and then they sort of say, whereas Lizzo and this other guy, Jesse St. John, just kind of showed up. And they were working with the backing tracks that the Raisin Brothers and Eves have been working on.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not... I mean, they're not saying, like, oh, she's not done anything. But I mean, that's pretty normal that you'd create the track before the vocalist comes in.
Yes, you would expect your producer to have done that. Yeah. But I suppose the crucial point is that what they say is, as a team, as a group, they had a conversation about incorporating this meme as a lyric. And as a result of that, the Raisin Brothers then reworked the instrumental base of the track in order to take in these lyrics. And I guess in that, they're kind of implying, therefore, they were involved, despite what Lizzo has said, in how that lyric was then used and how it was sung. So, yeah, basically insisting that this demo track was not just Lizzo in their studio. It was a real team effort, including the inclusion and development of the key lyric.
Yeah, so they say at the end of their recording session on this track, Lizzo told Justin Raisin that she and her producer, Ricky Reed,
who also has a co-credit on Truth Hurts,
had been trying to do something like this for a while. So saying that, you know, that's, they were definitely instrumental in creating something that they were aiming for in their work. And then they go on to say, at the end of the five-hour session, Justin, Jeremiah, Eves, St. John and Lizzo had each contributed inseparable and interdependent, non-trivial amounts of creative, original and intellectual expression to create Healthy and a second song called Gorgeous, with the intent that their creative contributions be combined.
And it didn't just end there. They then say that the aforementioned Ricky Reed, having heard the track, had some feedback. So Lizzo and the Raisins then went back into the studio again on their own this time and did a little bit more work on the track. And then it was sent over to Lizzo and her team and to Ricky Reed. And then there was a bit more backwards and forwards and positive conversations going on. And then the Raisins say it all went quiet.
Yes, they sent a few emails asking when Healthy was going to be released or if it was going to be released. And the emails eventually stopped being answered.
And then, this is the dramatic moment in this new lawsuit, and then Truth Hurts is released.
Yeah.
And Justin Raisin says the main reason he knew that Truth Hurts had been released is because some of his friends and collaborators who had heard the earlier track Healthy and then had heard Truth Hurts when it was released assumed that Truth Hurts was an evolution of Healthy and that therefore he'd been involved in it. And they started emailing him saying, oh, I love that Lizzo track that you've been involved in. And he was like, what Lizzo track that I've been involved in? And almost immediately he then got in touch with his manager and said, OK, I've listened to both of these tracks. They've clearly taken a bit of our track and put it into their track, which either means that Truth Hurts is a adaptation of Healthy, so therefore they should have got a license off us as co-owners of the original track, or in essence it's an evolution of the track, it's the same copyright. But either way, they've released this track, which includes work that we've done without telling us, without crediting us, without cutting us in. And so began quite a long backwards and forwards of emails and phone calls between various people on both sides about the ownership of this track.
I mean, as well as people he knows saying congratulations on your great track that you did, didn't he also, the lawsuit says he got a letter from ASCAP when it went to number one.
Yes.
Saying congratulations on your number one.
Although, to be fair, I think that was because at some point with the backwards and forwards, his people had registered them.
Oh, yes. Oh, of course, yeah, their names were on the track briefly, weren't they? Yes, I remember now.
In the ASCAP database, albeit not officially, which was sufficient for, yes, for ASCAP to send them the congratulations letter when Truth Hurts got to number one, even though, unfortunately, the ownership of the track was still very much in dispute at that time. Well, of course, not as far as Lizzo is concerned, because remember, in Lizzo's lawsuit, she was adamant that although there was some back and forth after Truth Hurts was released and there was a little bit of a conflict, all of that had been settled by early 2019 before the track became a hit. There was that phone call, remember, when apparently everything was agreed. That's what Lizzo's lawsuit says. But yeah, we have a very different version of that phone call in the new lawsuit with Justin Raisin's version.
Yes, so in the Raisin Brothers lawsuit, it tells the story of that phone call saying, Lizzo admitted to Justin that elements of Truth Hurts never would have been created without Healthy, and admitted that Reed suggested to her that they take elements from Healthy for Truth Hurts, including the 100% lyric and melody. However, Lizzo also told Justin that she did not want to share any percentage of Truth Hurts with the Raisins. In fact, they then claim, Lizzo used the call as an opportunity to intimidate Justin into stalling his efforts to pursue the Raisins' claims. Lizzo warned Justin to be wary of continuing to seek a percentage for Truth Hurts because, quote, you know, I'm not trying to have problems with you, if you know what I'm saying. Like, I could be in a room with someone tomorrow that knows you. You know what I'm saying.
What a Lizzo impression
that was,
there.
I mean, it was almost like she was here with us.
I thought she was for a moment. It came as quite a surprise. So, yeah, a very different interpretation of that phone call. Yes. I mean, obviously... I mean,
quickly summarize. Lizzo says she was in the studio. She saw a meme. She included it in a song. The Raisins weren't in the room. Then they had a phone call. Justin Raisin said... yeah, fair enough. I don't own any of that song. We'll drop our claim. The Raisins say, we were very much in the room before she was even there. It was Jeremiah's idea to add the lyric to the track. They worked on it some more together afterwards. And then later when Truth Hurts came out, they had this phone call and Lizzo admitted that she'd used their track. And then rather than Justin Raisin just backing down, was intimidated by her into doing so.
Which is, of course, why lawyers will say, never agree things on the phone. Because people can leave phone calls with very different interpretations of what was said. And we have two very different interpretations here. And then, I mean, the last thing that the Raisins then say in terms of this idea that in early 2019, this had all been settled, they say they have further proof that that's definitely not the case. And that includes when the track finally got to the top of the Billboard Hot 100 because of the TikTok and the Netflix stuff. The aforementioned Ricky Reed, the producer on Truth Hurts, co-writer also, texted Justin Raisin basically saying, just want to let you know, Truth Hurts is at number one. Presumably they got an alert before the chart was actually published. Want you to know that from me before we hear it from anyone else. And then basically said, we need to keep talking about this. We need to sort out the copyright dispute on this. We can do this together. This being... quite some time after, according to Lizzo's lawsuit, it had all been solved and the Raisins weren't going to get their cut.
Yes, and of course, the difference with texts is it's written down, so you can present, you can hold your phone up in court and say, look, here it is.
Or screen grab, as they have done. The lawsuit is full of screen grabs of all of these text messages.
I was trying to add
emails.
A bit more visual drama to it, holding a phone up and look! Look at this!
And then the one last thing that they say in this new lawsuit is this Jesse St. John that we mentioned, who was also there on the original demo day when they wrote Healthy. And they did concede that it was him who'd spotted this meme. But they're saying that he does have a co-write credit on Truth Hurts. And as far as they're aware, his only link to Truth Hurts is that he was involved in the writing of Healthy.
Yeah.
So they're sort of saying, well, you've given him a co-write on Truth Hurts because he was there when we all worked together on Healthy. So where's our co-write credit? Where's our cut of the money? And so ultimately, that is what their lawsuit is asking for. Well, first of all, they want Lizzo's case dismissed, because you would, wouldn't you? And then they want their credit, they want their cut of the copyright, and of course, they want lots and lots of lovely money.
Yeah. Well, here's the point... regular listeners will know is coming.
It would be so good if this got to court.
This will not get to court. They will settle.
I would almost consider flying over to be in the courtroom.
But imagine the phone waving if it did get to court.
It's such a he said, she said, completely different versions of event type dispute. But yeah, almost certainly there will be a settlement at some point.
My guess is the Raisins and Eves will get their co-writer credit and a settlement. And it will all go away. Although, why they didn't just do that 2 years ago, who knows? But yeah, I don't think this is actually going to get to court. But we can always hold out hope.
Yep, I have my, whichever way it goes, I have my headline for the final judgment with some sort of terrible play on The Truth Hurts in there already.
I don't think you'll be the only person doing that.
Already on a sticky on my desktop, ready to go. So even though it's not going to go to court, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed in the meantime.
You know, we did the Morrissey special recently, and I think that the Morrissey libel case was probably the last case where we were like, no, this one's actually going to go all the way, because it really did look like it, because it had gone on for so long and there was such bad blood. But even that settled before it got to court, so... I don't think it's going to get to court.
No, it does tend to be the song theft cases that go all the way these days, isn't it? Rather than good, nasty, angry disputes like this one. But we can hope.
Still to come, another split lawsuit where you have to stop believing someone along the way.
Yeah.
I think that was even worse than your Truth Hurts one.
To go on the record as saying it's considerably worse than my Truth Hurts nearly headline.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to talk about Journey. Let's just leave it at that and move on. But now, the coronavirus. Never let it be said that this podcast is not newsworthy. The coronavirus is happening. We've all got it. And it's having a bad effect on the live music industry, which I think is probably the worst thing about all of it.
Yeah, it's like with all of our Brexit conversations where we focus on the albeit significant issues with British artists getting out touring across the European Union and European artists getting in with us with all of the visa nonsense that could be on the horizon. But then it does always feel like, but in the wider scheme of things, actually, that's a relatively small negative impact of Brexit. And it has to be said, the impact of the coronavirus on the music industry in the wider scheme of things is a relatively small side issue, but it's our remit.
Well, I mean, it isn't. I mean, there's a lot of industries being hit by this. I mean, there's already articles about whether Apple's going to recover from the hit it's taken on its production, because this particular coronavirus, COVID-19, as it's now known, because it's not the only coronavirus. Coronavirus, that's a type of virus. It's kind of a flu-like virus. It originated in China, spread quite widely there, and has had an impact on, well, not just Apple's production, but like lots of companies who have stuff manufactured in China. And obviously, since then, it's spread around the world to different degrees of severity. And as a result of this, different governments around the world have implemented different rules about large gatherings. And music events tend to be large gatherings, and that's why it's having an impact on the music industry.
It is interesting, isn't it, that obviously this story has been brewing for a while now, initially with the outbreak in China, but then the cases have been popping up in various countries around the world for you know, several weeks now. But it is sort of in the last 10 days that the music industry side to this, the live events industry side to this, really seems to have exploded in just a few days, really.
Yeah, well, I think it's what's happened. Honestly, lots of events in Italy were cancelled because that had a particularly bad spread of it. But I think it's less the actual spread, it's more now government reaction to it in attempting to limit the spread. So various countries have put in different rules. In France, they put an outright ban on anything above 5,000 people. I think there's another similar regulation in Switzerland, whereas in the UK, the advice currently is, don't worry about it, it's fine.
Well, certainly in terms of live events, they're saying we don't foresee any reason why we should be cancelling live events right now.
They're saying you're more likely to pick it up at work or at home.
While I say that it's only really in the last 10 days that this has become music industry news, I suppose, you know, we should acknowledge that slowly but surely in recent weeks, an increasing number of artists have been cancelling or postponing dates, particularly in parts of the world where there have been particularly large outbreaks of the virus.
Yes, so lots of Asian tours have been cancelled.
So the list of artists who are cancelling and postponing tours was increasing. Also on the grapevine, we were hearing that artists who were in the process of negotiating tours or festival spots had all started to procrastinate. They didn't necessarily want to commit. Again, specifically in Asia, but then obviously once we had the outbreak in parts of Europe, some American artists were like, oh, we don't want to leave the US in the next few months. We want to see how it turns out. So in addition to the shows that were actually being postponed and cancelled that had already been announced, behind the scenes there were shows that were not getting confirmed or committed in perhaps the way they would have done because of this. But I suppose it's in the last week that we've started to see festivals actually being affected by it. I mean, obviously, from a European perspective, we're not yet fully into the big festival season.
Yeah.
But festivals do happen 12 months a year. Certainly, obviously, we have the Southern Hemisphere festivals over the winter. And then the dance music industry seems to start its festival season earlier in the year. And so that's where most of the things have come from.
Well, you have lots of your festivals in skiing resorts, which obviously that's a winter pursuit.
And the majority of those tend to be on the electronic music side, don't they? So yeah, so we've started to see festivals being cancelled. Meanwhile, you know, outside of the music industry, quite a few conferences have started to be called off. Big companies are stopping internal events, and word is that that includes most of the big music companies. The majors, for example, have all stopped doing big internal events and sort of encouraging people not to travel internationally. I suppose before we have the actual confirmed cancellations on the music festival side, obviously the music industry, I mean technically the American music industry, but the global music industry as well, has one incredibly big gathering happening this month. And so a lot of chatter started to appear on the social networks amongst music industry people about South by Southwest, which is coming up in Austin, Texas. Now, South by these days, although it still has music at its core, obviously has lots of different conference strands on the side. And already music people were starting to say, oh my God, could this affect South by Southwest? And then we started to hear all the tech companies were pulling out of the tech side of South by, which just escalated the conversation about could this massive, massive get together for the music industry, could it be affected by government efforts to stop the spread of the virus?
Yeah, so as we record, South by Southwest is going ahead. We'll see if that happens, because it's an evolving story.
It is very much an evolving story. And of course, it's not the only showcase festival happening this month. In Europe, we've got Tallinn Music Week, a great showcase festival happening in Estonia. Obviously, not as big as South by Southwest, because nothing is as big as South by Southwest. But similar conversations then began. Well, what about Tallinn Music Week? So they have likewise issued a statement saying that Estonia has not been hugely affected. I think there are, as we record, there's two documented cases in the entire country. So Tallinn Music Week is definitely going ahead. And I suppose both Tallinn and South By are putting out statements which are trying to be, we're definitely going ahead, this isn't a problem, but at the same time, reassuring people who are coming that they are working with local government and with their partners and with experts to ensure that they do whatever they need to do health and safety wise to mitigate any risk, even though there isn't a risk, so you should still come to the event.
Yes. So while that's the approach of some large events, others have started cancelling, although I think generally not voluntarily, they have been ordered to do so by local government.
Yeah, so as we record this, we are aware of at least three electronic dance music festivals which are not happening, two of which are editions of the same festival.
Yeah.
So if we start with the Ultra Music Festival, which obviously began in Miami years and years ago, but now has editions all over the world. And there was meant to be, I think it's the first ever one in Abu Dhabi, was meant to be happening last week. That was cancelled. Organisers didn't explicitly state that it was because of concerns about the spread of the coronavirus, but it was for public health concerns.
Yeah.
So it's pretty certain that's what it was. And then the main event in Miami, which is due to happen later this month, because obviously they have the whole Miami Music Week at the end of March, which also has the Winter Music Conference in the middle of it. As we record, we've not actually had the official statement on this, but lots of unofficial statements have been going out to local media. And by this time this goes out, there should have been an official statement on this, that the main Ultra Music Festival in Miami is not happening. And that was a decision, well, made between organisers of the festival and government officials in Miami, although you sort of sense it was more at the insistence of the latter than the former.
Over in Europe, the Tomorrowland Winter Festival, I mean, Tomorrowland's another festival that takes place all over the world, but the winter edition of that in the French Alps has been called off now too.
You've already mentioned that the French government have been particularly hard line on this in terms of calling off events with large numbers. And so, yeah, that was very much a government decision. And the organisers of Tomorrowland in their official statement were quite clear that, that the government had told them, you can't have this and it's the government's fault. But it has to be said, although in some cases it is, whether it's local government, regional government, national government, in some cases these events are being called off because of the local authorities. Outside of the music industry, we have seen conferences being cancelled, not because of regulations, but because the organisers have decided it's not appropriate to be bringing people from all over the world at this time. So it remains to be seen whether or not any festivals go that route, as in voluntarily doing it rather than the pressure from government. Because, of course, if we look at this from a harsh commercial side, the big question for everybody in the festivals business, the live events business, the concerts business, and the conference business is, if you are the organizer of one of these events and you choose to cancel, are you insured for that?
Yeah.
And I would suspect, in terms of the case you would have with your insurer, you'll have a much better case. I mean, obviously, it will depend on the policy, and insurance companies are sometimes very good at finding reasons not to pay out. But my assumption would be, if you are forced to cancel by government, you're going to have a better case to claim on your insurance than if you choose not to go ahead precautionary reasons. So I think it will be interesting to see on the music side. We have seen it on the conference side, not music conferences, but outside the music industry on the conference side. It'll be interesting to see if any festivals do choose to not go ahead voluntarily. But my feeling is if they did, they would probably struggle to claim on their insurance. And if you're not owned by one of the big live music companies, the profit margins on these events are not huge. The finances are already quite tight. And so just calling off the event as a cautionary matter, if you're not insured for that, could be very damaging for those events. So obviously, I'm sure every event would like to stress that they always put the health and safety of their customers before anything else. But I mean, that will be very much weighing on the minds of the owners of these events before they voluntarily choose. And then even if they're forced to not go ahead, they'll be closely reading their insurance policies to see whether or not they're covered.
Yes. So, I mean, in the UK, obviously the big event everyone always looks to is Glastonbury. Glastonbury has said there's no plans to cancel at the moment, but is monitoring the situation. You would hope, I mean, it's not till June, and you would kind of hope that this would all have passed as an issue by then, but who knows?
It is so hard to know, isn't it? That it seems to me the world is currently split between those people who are genuinely concerned about this. And of course, you know, it's worth pointing out that for the vast majority of people who contract this virus, they're likely to have relatively mild cold-like symptoms. For some people, usually people who have pre-existing conditions that then are escalated, it can be very dangerous, and of course, ultimately, it can be fatal. But there are half the world who thinks that all of this is being blown out of all proportions, that we have, you know, serious flu-like viruses doing the rounds all the time. Yes, okay, this is more serious than usual seasonal flu, although not as serious as some past viruses that have done the rounds around the world. And so some people are thinking all of this is being blown out of all proportion, we should just all carry on regardless, which at the end of the day, here in the UK, is actually the official guidance. Mm. I mean, basically, the guidance here in the UK is, if you're feeling really ill, stay home and wash your hands. I mean, yeah. That's pretty much the guidance we've got so far. Not cancel your events, whereas, as we say, in other countries, they're being a little bit more hardline. But yeah, the world seems to be split between those people who think this is all being blown out of all proportions, it's all going to pass and actually be nowhere near as bad as people think, and then the other half who are thinking, oh, actually, this is very serious, and even though the vast majority of people who contract the virus will be fine, that doesn't help the people for whom it could be fatal.
So yeah, obviously, this is a much bigger story than just the music industry. But this is a music industry podcast, so that's what we're going to focus on. But yeah, we'll see how this develops over the coming weeks and months. Depending, we don't know how long the spread of this virus is going to continue. We don't know when there'll be a vaccine for it. We don't know if more events are likely to be cancelled. Well, I think more events are likely to be cancelled, but in what time frame? So it's kind of all up in the air at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, going back to that, no one can quite decide, is this all going to pass quite quickly, or is it much more serious than that? We don't know whether this could be the only time we ever talk about this on Set List, or it could become a common story we're talking about on the show that really does have quite a serious impact on the wider live entertainment business.
And finally this week, a fallout between the members of the most recent incarnation of Journey has resulted in two members of the band being kicked out and a $10 million lawsuit.
Yes, this is quite an interesting, entertaining case.
And complicated.
But it gets complicated because we've got two band members on one side, two members on the other side. The frontman, the current frontman, who's been fronting the band during its most recent incarnation, so not Steve Perry, who was obviously the frontman during the Hits era, and indeed the reunion that began in the late 2000s, the current frontman is not involved. So the four people involved, two on one side, two on the other, are people who have been in the band a very long time. So two of them are founder members from way back in the day, and all four were involved with Journey in the early 80s, which is when they had the big hits, Don't Stop Believing, obviously, with Hindsight being the biggest. Actually, I think at the time it wasn't, but because it had a resurgence courtesy of Glee in the 2000s, that's the one we all remember. So this isn't a dispute between people who've only been in the band for a few years and were not there in the heyday. They were all there in the heyday. So on one side in this dispute, we have bassist Ross Valerie and drummer Steve Smith. On the other side, we have guitarist Neil Sean and keyboardist Jonathan Kane. It's the latter two who have actually gone legal. And as I say, all four of these guys were involved in the band in the 80s heyday. And then Valerie on the one side and Sean on the other side were both founder members. So in some ways, it's not that one side has the heritage in the band and the other two have just shown up in recent years. They've both been involved in the band a long time. Although Sean and Kane, who are suing, are adamant in their lawsuit that they are the creative core of the band. They're the main songwriters. They've been involved pretty consistently throughout, whereas the other two had a big stint where they weren't in the band, mainly because they got sacked in the mid-1990s. And actually, for a part of the time they weren't in the band wasn't really operating. But these two guys say, we're the creative core of the band. We've been there throughout. It was us with the aforementioned Steve Perry who built the band up to being a hit-making machine in the early 80s. So we're more legitimate than the other two. Although, as I say, all four of these guys have been involved in the band a very long time. And basically, this is why it's quite an entertaining, intriguing lawsuit. They are accusing the other two of attempting a boardroom coup within the band's corporate entity, within
classic
the company,
rock and roll.
In order to give them control of the band's company and therefore control of the Journey trademark. And the allegation is the reason why Valerie and Smith want control of the company and the trademark is they're getting on a bit and they quite fancy the idea of retiring and not going on tour of the band anymore. But they quite like to carry on earning money from the other guys who carry on touring.
Yes, and which they can do if they own the trademark.
Exactly. So the allegation is they've tried to take control of the company and of the trademark so then that they can stand down and not tour of the band, but they can say to the other band members, but if you're going to carry on using the Journey trademark on your touring, you have to pay us a license fee so we can continue to earn even though we're not having to go on the road and tour. So that's the allegation. And the lawsuit sets out, that this boardroom coup allegedly occurred in which Valerie and Smith attempted to give them a casting vote, in essence, within the band's corporate entity.
Yeah, so Sean and Kane say that Valerie and Smith orchestrated a board meeting of this company, Nightmare Productions, in February, which was designed to oust Sean and Kane as company secretary and company president, respectively, and then to add allies of Valerie and Smith as new directors of the board in their place, thus taking control of the company.
Yeah, ensuring any future votes would skew in their favour because as well as the band members, there would be other people on the board, I don't know who, presumably a manager or an accountant or something, who would then vote in their favour if they sought to control the company, control the trademark, so that they could get money out of the rest of the band if they carried on touring, is the allegation. Although, in their lawsuit, Sean and Kane, hopefully you're still following the two sides in this dispute, they say that this board meeting that was staged where they changed the makeup of the board and who was the president and the secretary, that board meeting and the fact that they tried to do that and to take control of the company, that was both malicious, but also, and here's an amusing twist, it was also very ill-conceived, they say.
Yes, because they say that the trademark in the Journey name is not owned by Nightmare Productions. It's controlled by a separate company called Elmo Partners. And guess who controls that company? This is the test element to see if you've been following. Yes, you're right. Sean and Kane control that company. So even if this boardroom coup had worked, Sean and Kane claim, Valiant Smith would not have gained control of the trademark anyway.
Yeah, they own the trademark because the trademark is owned by this other company and they own the other company outright. So nobody can stage a boardroom coup on the other company because they don't have a seat at the board to start with. So this dispute has all kicked off since the new year. This malicious, allegedly, board meeting happened last month. And then apparently at the start of this month, once all of this had been uncovered by Kane and Sean, they basically sacked Smith and Valerie. So on one level, they're getting what they wanted because apparently they wanted to retire, but they didn't want to be sacked first. So the lawsuit says, given Smith and Valerie's greed, self-dealing and breaches of their fiduciary obligations, Kane and Sean expelled their bandmates from the band, and on the 3rd of March 2020, Kane and Sean provided written notice that Smith and Valerie were no longer part of Journey and would no longer perform or tour with the band.
So that sounds quite funny. You might be wondering why there's now a lawsuit over this. What do Kane and Sean want? Because they've got rid of their mortal enemies, apparently.
And according to them, they still own the trademark because they're still in control of the other company.
Yes. Now that is key because they want court confirmation that Elmo Partners controls the band's trademarks and that decisions made in the February board meeting of Nightmare Productions are invalid and therefore be overturned by the court and everything just put back to how it was before February. And also, they want some damages. That's why I've been talking about $10 million all the way through this. They would like $10 million, please.
Yeah, that would be compensatory damages, says the lawsuit, and they would like some punitive damages on top. I don't quite know, and I did pretty well read this lawsuit. I mean, maybe I missed a bit where they explained why they think they're due $10 million. I don't really know. That does seem rather ambitious. I mean, I can see if their version of events is true, who knows? But if it is, then yes, confirm who owns the trademark, overrule that boardroom coup from last month, confirm how things are going to move moving forward. But quite why the other side should hand over $10 million, I don't know. But that is what the lawsuit is asking for. So we await with interest, bearing in mind that we have learnt on this week's set list that there is always another side to the story.
Yes.
And so just like we enjoyed reading the Raisin Brothers version of the Truth Hurts dispute, we await with interest to get the other side's version on this Journey dispute and whether or not any future legal filings will be filed with the court explaining where the 10 million figure comes from, because at the moment I'm a bit confused.
But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you've got any questions or comments about anything we've discussed in this week's episode, do email us setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. You can subscribe to the show on, you know, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, and get this delivered every week right into your device or whatever, wherever you listen to podcasts. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU, presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Setlist is an Unlimited production.